Coming up next, WWER presents Your Care Partners, a show dedicated to providing support and education to our community about caregiving.
Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home.
Experienced professional caregivers Jill White and Marty Allman have casual conversations about care, offering advice and tips to help navigate caring for others. Jill White is a certified dementia practitioner and an Alzheimer's Association facilitator for caregiver support groups with over 30 years' experience working in long-term care. Marty Allman is certified as a master trainer for the Best Friends approach to Alzheimer's. She is a certified psychiatric nursing assistant with over 20 years' experience working in long-term care.
We are your care partners. Jill and I saw a need for an online hub for family caregivers and caregivers who may care for someone in a facility. We all, at some point in time, find ourselves caring for other people. So we wanted to help people navigate what caregiving's like. Being so close to the holidays, we thought that we would open with recognizing when someone might need care. But let's first start out with who we are.
Who are we?
We're good friends. Jill and I have worked together for years in the healthcare industry. And Jill, why don't you tell people a little bit about you?
Alrighty. So many years ago, I'm talking decades now, I was a certified assisted living administrator, then spent many decades working in different type of senior communities, first just senior retirement communities, and then ultimately assisted living with memory care, which had a draw for me, and which is why I did the training and became a certified dementia practitioner. As Marty said, we saw such a demand for help, more so for the caregivers or care partners. So that's what we wanted to do. Again, I worked in assisted living, memory care, independent living, the whole gamut. That's where I met Marty. So we've spent many years together. She developed programs that were introduced into the communities we worked in, and pretty interesting stuff to get into and involved with, but lots of training, obviously. And we're always learning because everything's changing all the time.
Yes, all the time, all the time. I'm Marty Allman. Basically, my career started out about 20 years ago. I am a certified activities professional. Over the years, I've held titles as recreation therapy director, memory care director. I'm also certified dementia practitioner. I started caregiving at the very young age of 11 years old. Little did I know that it would be a calling in my life. I took care of a neighbor's mother. Her mother had a stroke. She just needed somebody to stay home with her while she went out and did a Bible study class. Little old 11-year-old me, and I knew nothing. I knew nothing, but I knew that I cared about people and I had a fondness for older folks and a real respect for older folks at a very young age. So here we are.
Here we are. The other thing that I failed to mention, which has kept me involved, even though I just retired a year ago, I'm also a facilitator for the Alzheimer's Association and meet regularly with caregiver support groups. And that is, again, what intensified our drive to try to figure out how to get support to these folks that desperately need it, either don't know what to ask for or are kind of humble and don't wish to ask for help, or they don't have time to ask for help. So it's key that we try to reach folks that are really, really spending their lives 24/7 taking care of another person and not taking care of themselves typically. Mm-hmm. And the holidays are the first key to maybe unlocking what's happening.
We wanted to talk about recognizing when care may be needed. This is the time of year. Thanksgiving is a few days away for us right now. What are some signs that might make you think that someone needs some care? So let's say you come from out of town for the holidays and you noticed someone who keeps their house normally very, very clean, it's not so clean anymore. Maybe they're not so clean anymore. Maybe you've noticed some hygiene issues. Not the time to address it when everybody's coming in the door to visit for the holidays, but make note that that's different. And maybe you can add some insight into that as well.
And it is difficult because the people that are coming to visit are focused on a family get-together, a holiday, a joyous occasion. And often they're not really noticing what's going on behind the scenes. But as Marty said, there are things you can certainly look for. Snoop around a little. It's okay because you're concerned about this person to make sure that they are able to care for their home still. Maybe get a housekeeper for a Christmas present for them or something. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things you can do to not put them down necessarily or impact them, because most folks are very protective of themselves and often they kind of know something's going on. So they try to hide it, cover it up as they will. Just, you know, if you notice things are in different places than they normally were. The other thing, and we've talked about obviously lots of times, when someone who normally enjoyed being with their family is sort of holding back. And I mentioned last time about a woman that for the first big family holiday in almost a year, she kept going into the bedroom to be alone. And her family didn't know what was going on. And it was the noise. It was sensory overload, which also can be a trigger for someone that has even the very early stages of dementia. Loud TVs, loud conversations, blaring music, children running around.
Right.
That can really be a trigger for someone they have to get away from it. So it's just being more cautious and being just more observant about what's going on.
And noticing, you know, maybe a slight change in someone's baseline personality. Maybe, you know, they're not as patient as they used to be with the grandkids or you or other family members. That's kind of a sign that something's going on. It doesn't necessarily mean cognitively either. Uh-huh. It could be physically. Uh-huh. Maybe they're in pain. Maybe they're experiencing arthritis or something else going on that they haven't shared with you.
We had an incident with someone that stopped coming to our support group, had been in some pain, obvious, when walking. And they were walking around probably for months with a shattered hip.
Oh, gosh. So
three surgeries later. So, I mean, it's really a lot of things that you just kind of don't take for granted, you know, without digging or making an uncomfortable situation. Right. Try to get whatever information you can visually see or somehow have a conversation about how things are going now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Sit down and have the conversation. What's been going on in your world? You know, we were talking about the refrigerator.
Yes.
That is a big clue.
Yes.
You know, sometimes, you know, make sure that there's not certain things going on in the refrigerator that, you know.
Stuff growing.
So, yeah, let's just stuff growing. I mean, we all have that normal stuff that we just need to throw away. But if you notice a little bit more or maybe not enough food in the refrigerator or the cabinet, that's another sign that someone just may need some extra care. We're not saying that that person's going down a downhill slope, but it's a clue.
Yeah, their habits have changed. They're no longer going to church on Sundays. They're not going to their knitting group. They're not getting together with their coffee class. Whatever their activity may have been, golf, like someone who stopped golfing. Things like that can be clues, not necessarily. That's an easy opener for the conversation. Mm-hmm. So you're not attacking them or threatening, or you're just saying, hey, I notice, you know, you're not golfing anymore. What's up with that?
Right.
And see what kind of responses you get. You know?
Yeah. So this kind of leads me into something I wanted to just talk about. It's kind of serious. You know, have you had conversations with your family members? Maybe you're all very healthy right now. I have a large family. I have sisters who are older than me. We've had the conversation, you know, if something happens to you, what are your wishes? What would you like? We've had these conversations because we've been in the healthcare field and we've seen on a daily basis families that show up in crisis. No plan in place. God love them. Trying to, you know, figure out where to turn. And that's the worst time to get a plan in place is when you're in the middle of a crisis, because you might not make the best decisions or you might make a hurried decision. It's a good way to get the conversation started. You can research that website online. It's fivewishes.org. It helps you plan for maybe a crisis for your future. I don't have any children, and I have lots of great, wonderful nieces and nephews. They, unfortunately, fortunately, will be the ones that will probably care for me as I age. And so I've made it clear to them what I'd like. And when it was based on the five wishes, Jill and I both took the 8-hour course on how to have these conversations mm-hmm. about the five wishes. But I just wanted to put that plug in there because I think it's a really good resource and a good way to maybe begin the conversation yeah. of what you want. And again, I want to say at Thanksgiving and Christmas, that might not be the time to have the conversation, but it might be a good time to say, hey, after this, can we just have a phone call and talk about, you know, what you'd like?
And I think you can open it up by talking about your wishes, what you've got in place, which hopefully, you know, I always say anybody over the age of 18 really needs to think about that, as sad as it may be. You never know, you know, God forbid somebody gets in a car accident.
Right.
And they can no longer communicate. You know, what wishes might they have, or what do they wish to have, you know, as far as extraordinary measures and all that. But if you're talking about yourself, it's kind of a family or a couple of family members saying, well, we've decided this is what we want. How do you feel about that? And just make it kind of a natural conversation, not a, you know, a family intervention.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
you're pointedly looking at one person saying, you know, we're here for you. What do you want?
Yeah. Which kind of, in a way, kind of brings up just a little, I want to give a little snippet about family dynamics.
Oh, wow. Wow. Which, by the way, do not change. They just kind of get exacerbated.
Right, right. Family, just because somebody in your family needs care does not mean that your dynamic with that person or anybody else in the family changes.
That's tough.
It is a wonderful and noble thing to be a caregiver for a loved one or a friend. But just keep that in mind, that you still have that dynamic, whether that person is well or not.
And most of the people that are doing this caregiving, which is a very, very heavy burden, are not feeling very noble while they're doing it. It is a burden. And what we have found, I mean, in our experience, almost, I won't say exclusively, but the family members that are not doing the actual caregiving are usually criticizing the one or ones that are. Again, if the conversations are key, especially if you can say, well, you know, remember we talked to mom or we talked to dad and this is what he wanted or she wanted. Mm-hmm. So if you can kind of default and just say, I'm just carrying out wishes. My mother, we talked about everything. It was such a blessing to not have to make any decisions. All I had to do was carry out her wishes. Mm-hmm. Whether anybody else was happy with it or not, I didn't care. I was carrying out her wishes. Mm-hmm. That really is a gift you can give to the people that will ultimately be caring for you. Mm-hmm. And by the way, let them know that you've chosen them for those roles.
Right.
Because that's another key thing that sometimes people forget. Like, oh, I chose my nephew. He's going to be my power of attorney. Well, the nephew was never told until it was necessary. So didn't have the conversation about what might be wanted. So it's kind of all tied together. It should be just sort of a natural progression, not a catastrophic we're in a crisis situation decision.
And we wanted to also just kind of let you know that if you do get in a crisis situation, let's say, you know, you get a phone call that someone's fallen and they're at the hospital, and that can be a very overwhelming experience. And Jill and I want to let you know that we're here. We'll do our best to help you navigate that situation.
And find resources.
Where you are. Yeah. We were talking about you and your mom had the conversation and that you need to let the person know. I'm going to just share a little personal bit about myself. My dad was in very good health in his late 80s, and we were all home for some gathering, whether it was a birthday or a holiday or something. Boyfriends, husbands, grandkids, everybody was there. And he said, I want my daughters to come upstairs with me in about, you know, 15 minutes. And we're having a family meeting. And we were all like, okay, great, Dad. All right. And so we all went upstairs to his office and he sat down and he said, I just want to let you guys know that I have a plan in place. This is what's going to happen. This is who's in charge.
Awesome.
Under no circumstances is this to be changed. And if it is changed, I will be the one that changes it. And so it was very clear. Nice. I was very thankful that he did that, because when it came down to his care, we all knew our roles. Mm-hmm. That was
the gift.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's definitely a gift.
It was priceless. And it kept us on course.
Yeah.
Throughout the caregiving journey, which we're here to help you navigate, things can get bumpy and you can get off track. Those dynamics can kick in and somebody's feelings can get hurt. But like you were saying, if you just bring yourself back to this is what the person wanted.
Yeah.
Then it flows much easier.
Yeah.
And it can help you get over whatever your little issue was.
I mean, hopefully there's enough time for the person like was there was with your dad for each individual to then sit with him at some other time, perhaps, and either say, thank you for choosing me or saying, are you kidding? What'd you do?
Right.
Whatever it is. I mean, that, because you're just dealing with that person, it's their wishes. It's not your sister Marty who's making the plans or your sister Jill who decided to do this or that. It's they're carrying out the wishes that were clearly laid out for everybody. So respect it, like it, maybe not, but at least respect it.
Right. And you were talking about how one time someone was selected for or something.
Yeah.
I just think this is interesting and this is real. This is going to be real.
Yeah. I mean, we're sitting in my office with a gentleman and his daughter and son, and he had chosen his daughter for medical power of attorney and his son for financial power of attorney. And when they were talking about what measures he would want, he clearly turned to his daughter and said, you will have to pull the plug. Well, she teared up instantly and said, Dad, I won't be able to do that. And he said, well, you have to. It's my wishes. She said, I won't be able to do that. And his son piped up and said, I can do it. So we all had a laugh. And then he switched. He was able to put her, because she was also very good with finances. So he made her the financial power of attorney and his son the medical, which, you know, it's not a funny situation, but it's a human situation. Mm, and it's, again, letting the people know what you're expecting of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there is this role and this is what the role entails. And can you do it? It's probably best to ask them if they're comfortable with it before, you know,
or just
bestowing
you're doing this.
That gift on them. Yeah. You know, like crowning someone. Yeah.
True. And that kind of goes back to, a time when we were caregiving for my father and we were each taking turns with him as his condition got worse. He needed more and more physical hands-on care. And I had a sibling who wasn't comfortable with that. It had nothing to do with how much she loved my dad or anything like that, but she was not comfortable helping my dad bathe or go to the restroom. And she let us know. So then nobody had that big expectation of her when it was her turn to care for him. We had a plan in place to make sure those things were done before she came relieve us for care. And applause to her for admitting and being open enough to say, I'm not comfortable with this. Now, of course, she did when she needed to, but she let everybody know that she wasn't comfortable.
She preferred not to. And I think that's why those conversations are so important, not just for the person with this disease or that needs the care, but for the people that are going to be doing some of the caregiving, whether that's outside, vendors or private sitters or whatever it is, or family members. It's so important to talk about it. And because we both have quirky senses of humor, but it's very important to try to maintain that somehow if you're able to.
Yeah.
I tell a story about my aunt was having a really bad day. I was probably at her home, I don't know how many times a day, to help with something that had occurred. And she grabbed me by the shoulders and shook me. She was very strong for whatever, 90 years old, and looked me dead in the eyes and goes, I don't want to get old.
Oh.
And I thought, well, this is not going to go well. And I just looked at her and I said, you know what, Aunt Bet? Too late. And we both had a great laugh, kind of laughed till we cried. And it's like, it's just real. You're all going through this together. You don't know what the next step is. It's like you're going on a long journey and you have no idea where you're going, how long it's going to take, who's going with you. It's it's overwhelming. Use the humor when you can.
My dad used to say, well, I don't know. I've never been this old before.
Oh, my God.
So maintaining that humor. There was something else I was going to say. Oh, have a parachute. Regardless of where you are in your caregiving phase, I mean, you could just be bringing meals to someone. Have a parachute. So just bringing meals to someone on a weekly basis and being tied to a schedule for that can be exhausting. And trying to maintain your own life mm-hmm. at the same time, maybe think about putting a backup in place, whether that be a neighbor or people from the person's church.
Mm-hmm. Meals on wheels.
Meals on wheels.
Whatever's available.
Friends. You know, a lot of times people will say, oh, you know, I heard about your mom or your sister or whoever the person is. Please let me know if there's anything I can do to help.
Yeah.
Which is.
That's such an open-ended.
It is.
Statement. And so make a list.
Yeah. Make a list. If you know you're going to be caring for mm-hmm. someone, get yourself a notebook mm-hmm. and make a list of what you think you're going to need mm-hmm. to make you the best caregiver you can be.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that saying, and maybe it's a cliche and been said over and over again, but when you're on an airplane, you know, the first thing they tell you to do is put the oxygen mask on yourself first.
Yep.
Then you can help others.
Yeah.
Having your little notebook and your little list of things that can be oxygen to you, that feed your spirit, that, you know, people can help you with little things like the boy down the street wouldn't mind mowing the lawn mm-hmm. for you one day.
Walking a dog.
Or walking a dog. We were talking about that the other day.
You know, taking them for a ride or maybe visiting mm-hmm. to give the person that's there, if there's someone there all day. I mean, obviously you're going through a stage and things are changing.
Right.
But make lists of kind of what you do. And then think of what of those things could someone else actually do for you if mm-hmm. you're not able to, because mm-hmm. your time, those 24 hours seem to evaporate doing something for someone else. And mm-hmm. there's nothing left for you to get your stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be afraid to help. Cause Marty said that when someone offers to help, that's usually very genuine, and it would be lovely for them to have something, even if it's something very small, to help you with that would make them feel better that they're kind of helping out right. in a tough situation and doing something.
And it could be something simple. Like I had a friend, God love you, Gigi, thank you so much, who called me every single day while I was caring for my dad. That was 3 years that I cared for my dad off and on. And she called me every day just to check in. Hey, mm-hmm. where are you at today? How you feeling today? That's priceless.
It sure is.
We had a family friend who really loved my dad. And she would come by and just bring like a big lasagna or some kind of casserole. She would just drop it off. She wouldn't make a big deal about it or anything. She would just like, here you go.
Nice.
And then she would leave. She also would come and do the rosary with him, which was really nice and gave me a break during the day. And something else too, grocery shopping can be stressful anyway, right? And I was fortunate enough to be in an area that had a Peapod, I think it was, from Giant Foods.
Oh, wow.
And they would actually deliver the groceries to the house. So I could sit on my phone or iPad and order what we needed, set up the delivery time, and they would show up. They would even bring the groceries into the house. That was
what a help.
That was huge. See if you can get your groceries delivered.
I know. I mean, in the Northern Neck, there are a lot of these services that are not quite available here
right.
rural areas. But you can order online, and another friend who's offered to help could
pick
up for you.
Pick them up.
You pay for it, mm-hmm. order it. It's great. And then, again, they're just doing something little and something minor. But it's really not. It's really a big thing. Any help is big.
Yeah.
Any
it's help huge. Is big. It's huge.
Yeah.
So yeah, that parachute list is important. Something else that we have talked about in length is starting a journal. And you may want to elaborate on that a little bit.
I think journaling is key to sometimes keeping your sanity, because you get so caught up in the day to day. There's so many things pulling you in so many different directions. And if you could find 5 minutes or 10 minutes or whatever amount of time you can sort of set aside, or whenever it happens, but to just jot down what's happening, the good especially, not just, oh, this has been a horrible day and I can't believe it's this bad. Or, you know, in the very beginning, you're maybe jotting down things you're noticing. Gosh, walking a lot slower than ever before. It doesn't want to go all the way to the end of the street anymore. You know, just little things like that can be very telling. And again, like Marty said in the very beginning, it could be something physical. It could be something going on that, of course, they're not going to tell you, because typically the person doesn't want to be a problem, mm-hmm. doesn't want to be a burden, doesn't want to be the center of attention, doesn't want to complain. So you kind of have to snoop around a little bit. But the journaling will help you, especially as you look back in time. If you're having a really bad day, maybe turn back to one of those great days where you sat in the garden and watched the birds, or, you know, whatever it was, that did get to go for a nice walk or maybe a great drive. Often driving, I found a lot of the caregivers, when their significant person with the disease is being fidgety or, you know, anxious, they'll say, oh, let's go for a ride, or let's whatever the destination is, doesn't matter. And often that will sort of calm them down, take their mind off something. I think we've learned a lot. Dissuading and redirecting is key. Don't get caught up. It's sort of like arguing with a child. If you argue with someone, you're going to lose. Just don't even. You can't argue. You're going to lose. So just find another way. Find some redirection, or walk away, or think it through. But jotting those things down can be key for looking back. And also for, especially if you start it at a baseline, you can actually go back and go, oh, yeah, I forgot. He used to do that, and he's not doing that anymore. So just making that just helped you take note of things, because it's overwhelming and so stressful. So you're not going to remember stuff. It also helps when you're going to the doctors. Make you highlight things you want to talk about with the doctor. Otherwise, you're going to get in and blown out the door, and you go, oh, shoot, I forgot to ask them this or tell them about that. So writing stuff down, or, again, you know, giving yourself memos or whatever your thing is, make note of it somehow.
Yeah, my sister Susan, she was initially taking my dad to doctor's appointments and things like that. And she would write down what the doctors were telling her. And then she would write down his weight, you know, and his blood pressure and things like that. And then she could come back and tell the rest of us, this is what the doctor said. This is what his blood pressure is. This is what we need to look out for, those kind of things. So that was really helpful too. And she kept a really great journal.
That's great.
Yeah. And as things kind of progressed and Dad was home more often and I was a more permanent person caring for him, we had a journal. Because when you're caregiving, you can't always remember everything. So, you know, I could keep track of when I gave him diabetes medication or
what he ate or didn't eat.
Yeah, what he, the amount of food he was eating. So then when my other sister came home and kind of took over for me in the evenings, she knew what he had eaten during the day. She knew what medications he'd taken. So she could go to that book and kind of flip it and go, okay, maybe we didn't have such a great day today. You know, maybe we need to do something kind of fun tonight, distract him from the not so great day or whatever.
Keeping everyone literally on the same page.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
literally, yeah. We see what we're doing as a real help, and we really hope that people will tune in and, if nothing else, laugh and get a kick out of us, maybe, in, you know, get a break in their caregiving day to just go, those two fools, what are they doing?
Thank you, help.
Thank you very much for watching. Thank you to our families for supporting us and believing in us, especially over the years.
And know that you can do this.
You can do it.
But you will definitely have to reach out your hand. But I promise you there will be others reaching their hands toward you. So don't be afraid. Reach out. Just know you're not alone,
'cause I'm gonna make this place your home. If you or someone you know is caring for others, please feel free to share this podcast with them. You can listen online at wwer.org.
Please send questions, concerns, or suggestions for future topics to our email, carepartners@wwer.org.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.